J10, number 7A.
Okay, we begin now and see that we stopped at the point that we were going to look at Plato and see then how he really had the a vision back there at his dates of 427 to 347 BC, when he began to see also how these values really are the constituents of reality, or the basic stuff of the reality. And therefore, we know he, being a pupil of Socrates and a aristocratic Athenian, we founded, we know, the first college, the academy, in 388 BC, and he was one of the first systematic political theorists. And it was at this point that he began in his book, The Republic, giving us really this sense of values and the importance of values. And his big point was to show how all these values together in the meaning and their implementation brings out this whole point of what is justice and what is injustice. And he said that there was a distinction between human beings on what part of the soul was dominating their character. And he said there were three elements of the soul. One was appetite, the second was courage, and the third was reason. And he said we were related to the class and function in the state according to these three elements of the soul, according to which one was dominant. If, for example, the appetite was dominant, we were in the laboring class. Or if courage was dominant, we were a warrior. Or if reason was dominant, we were a ruler. He even went a bit further with his political statements and saying that the relationship between the individuals and the state, the individual is more important than society. And he said we must know the nature of individuals in order to ascertain then the characteristic of a good society. For example, good people equal a good state, and corrupt people equal a corrupt state. Well, I think we've learned that one, haven't we, through experience. That looks to be so. Then he went on and just extended what we've seen. He said, therefore, in elaboration of what we did in the in a little epitomized way, he said the classification of individuals as to their virtue, class, and duties, he said, of course, was according to what part of the soul or psychological trait was dominant. And he said how the psychological traits depended upon the major biological traits. So he's giving us a little bit more information. And so he said that the biological traits determine the psychological traits. So if uppermost in our biological traits then was the stomach, which led to the psychological trait of appetite, which led to the virtue of moderation, which led to the class of a laborer, which then our duty was to be a artisan. So that's in his elaborated form. Or he said if the biological trait was the accentuation on the heart, then the psychological trait was courage, the virtue would be courage, the class a warrior, the duty to protect the state. Or if he said the biological, if its ascendancy trait was in the head, the psychological trait would be in reason, the virtue would be wisdom, the class would be ruler, and the duty would be government. So he could see then, as we were seeing with Havel, that he goes on to show that these traits or qualities are so, so important, and that those really, as I mentioned, are the stuff upon which the society runs, the social part of society, the political part, the artisans, all of our various virtues and values constitute which class we would belong to and which duty we would have. Well, it was just showing then that he put so much emphasis on, of course, that ideal realm of ideas. And here he's showing how it translates itself down into the shadow world, he called it, of which we work every day. And in this particular shadow world of which we live, he put then, of course, the translation of that ideal world of ideas down to various virtues and values. So this took a while. We seem to have lost that over the ages, where a strong emphasis on a science of values, or just an order of values, was lost for the search, for example, after the almighty dollar, that seemed to take ascendancy to any virtues and values. Often in the political scene, as we know, the virtues and values went out the window and the dollar came flying right in, didn't it, with wings on it. So we can see now, with the sense that we are getting closer and closer to a virtue-based society, we can see then that this whole system for us today, according to what constitutes a government, is so important. We come in the United States again to another political years coming up from 95 to 96. And we always have to re-look at the values that are behind the political scene and the politicians, and what really is necessary beyond what they say, really the values upon which they base their various ideas. So we see then this problem of what constitutes true government really was brought to light to us. It always has been there, but this whole big break and another switch where you could really hear the Christ idea recently, then was the revolution of 1989, and then that's what brought, of course, Vaclav Havel to the United States just a few months later. This revolution happened in and around Christmas, I think it was, in November, December of 89, and then, as we saw, he was speaking the joint session of Congress in February of 1990. But this showed us rapid changes that were going on in the world governments. We had in 89 that crisis in political, economic, and social. We saw at that time a change really then from the first degree of the physical, of the Adam man, the mortal mind, the second record of creation man, those qualities of material, selfishness, sensuality, mortality, evil beliefs, duality, friction, all of those that went into making the political scene before 89 in many of the countries in Europe as under dictators, a central control, autocracy, which was overthrown in those that autocratic controlled political scenes of communism. We know how there was slavery of the individual, no individual rights. In the social scene, it was just animal behavior and values, survival of the fittest. All of these things around the world was beginning to lead us more and more into a drugged society with conflicts and war. That whole, again, as I mentioned, the eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, bringing out this tremendous, and still with us in Yugoslavia, clan fighting that has been going on for centuries. Just animal, well, some people say animal has better behavior than the behavior that men show. It's sad to say we have to call it animal. We better say quote unquote. Many of those species show a much better behavior. Conflict and war. And in the economy, we know that it was this all type of society and attitudes and values bring the laws of limitation, protectionism, a war economy on a military budget. Again, the whole sense of poverty involves the consciousness of a nation. It's a fear there's not enough to go around. So we get that whole law of the jungle happening. But we know then that we are going now into a much more sense, as Havel said, we had to make that switch into the second degree of a more moral society based on a democracies, and that they, as I mentioned, they do look, of course, to America for that sense of democracy, though in Europe, of course, we've had our democracy. I think America, what, has had it for 200 years? Switzerland has had a democracy for, what, 500-700 years? It's been in Europe. It's just that America, because those Europeans that left to come to the new land, it always has been to look to America for as a beacon of democracy. And we want to keep it up now on the basis of our values. And as it says, and Max brings out over and over again in his book, which is a really a timeless book on government, where his book on Christian government, he shows that we get the government we deserve. If the people are of a nature of not giving up the sense of clan fighting and animal behavior, so to speak, then we get that autocracy, because that's that hierarchical control. It demands it. It asks for control, doesn't it, if our behavior. So really, in a way, it's up to the individual within the state, as Plato said, that the individual is more important because the individual determined the government that he had. And if the individual is going to continue to propagate these first degree qualities, then it's going to demand a hierarchical control of a hierarchy. If the individual shows much more compassion and hope and faith amongst each other and in the spirit to agree or disagree, then we get the democratic. But if the individual shows that it wants to respond to a science and understanding, to theocracy, and I mean the theocracy according to, as we see in Christian Science and not defined by other denominations, but how theocracy would be self-government under the immediate directions of the laws of life, truth, and love as we know them. So this then brings us now to the third step, then, in thinking in terms of ideas. So what we saw then was that whole transition from the call for values into saying, well, we do. We have a science of reality values, and those are called the science of ideas. And those are the ideas of God, and which we see are the ideas then of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And we see that only these ideas of God are real and good. Why? Because they come from the divine mind. They come from that the divine mind forms ideas. Those are original images in mind, original primordial conceptions in the divine mind. And always it is that principle brings the ideas to us. That one mind, which is common to all of us, which is our goal in the eight ordered steps to oneness with being, as we know, to become one with that mind. So we all have this single vision of reality, and we all base ourselves on the same standard of reality, the same absolute standard of values, the same absolute standard of ideas are common to us all. This has to be in order to go forward into a one world view, into a one spiritual view, as the 8,000 year period shows, where it's the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and we all spiral higher and higher from a boundless basis, from the infinitesimal to infinity. That all has that holistic view of science itself. Has to be based on a common standard of values, which is a common standard of consciousness. So here on this step is the rule is, I learn what ideas of God are, and B, I learn what ideas of God are not, i.e., I learn what illusions are. Or we could say, I learn what the counterfeit beliefs are against mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The criterion for judging what are ideas and what are illusions, of course, come from us from the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health, by Mrs. Eddy. In there is the only book that we trust for defining the spiritually scientific meaning of ideas and what the illusions are. I wouldn't know anywhere else we could go. If we went to an ordinary dictionary, a Merriam-Webster is good. I mean, one's always impressed that in Merriam-Webster, we have these, how he, in his early editions, he always quoted the definitions from Christian Science. Do you notice that in his early editions? So many terms he defines according to how Christian Science defined it. So it showed that Christian Science had great respect during his time and gave us many, many of the definitions that are in the Merriam-Webster dictionary. But we still know that in that dictionary, as it even comes down today, we get a few definitions as defined in Christian Science, but most of them are a psychological meaning or the physical meaning of various terms. So these terms as creator and producer and law and origin and order and identity and cybernetics and, well, that isn't in the textbook, but government and exaltation, form, plan, all these various terms, law, order, rule, system, method, form, and plan, we only rely on, as we know, science and health to define these terms. So in our synonym study of what are ideas, we will see then that, as we had the nice little discussion, that the textbook is going to be and is readily available, hopefully in the bookshops, that we can turn others to the bookshop to get the textbook free of any church connotation of Christian Science. So we can easily say, well, we get this book in the bookshop and we turn to it for defining the terms, and that we follow the impersonal scientific method of text interpretation, and that we study all the reference to the seven synonymous terms for God as they are found in the textbook, and that this study is based on the rules for studying the synonymous terms for God as Max Kapler gives them and as he reproduces them in the book that we have here, those rules for studying the synonymous terms we know. We have in a study aid for the science of Christian Science by Max Kapler. That we find as a invaluable reference work. And in here, he actually went through Dorley's method. Dorley did the method of how to study the synonymous terms in the textbook, where Dorley asked, as we well know, to get seven textbooks if you wanted, and underline in one text where mind appears, and another text where spirit appears, and another text where soul appears, and another text where principle appears, and another text where life appears, and another text where truth appears, and another textbook where love appears. And with those seven textbooks, one would take the mind one, and everywhere mind appears, one would underline mind, and then go in according to certain rules, impersonal criteria for judging how to discern those ideas. One only would take, for example, what Mrs. Eddy said. If she was talking about the divine mind in a paragraph, then if she said that mind is the creator, then we know in those days they wrote down the term creator. Or if she said spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes, then they wrote down under spirit, spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes. Or if she said soul identifies, then under soul she wrote down soul identity. They followed an impersonal criteria for just writing down what Mrs. Eddy said the term was, that mind is, and whatever she said, they wrote it down. Whatever spirit is, they wrote it down. Whatever soul is, they wrote it down. And same with principle, life, truth, and love, until we know they had quite a comprehensive list based on very impersonal scientific methods for investigating those terms in science and health. This is these rules for study are what Max has taken up in his syllabus one class, and that is available on tape, and it forms a very impersonal basis for ascertaining the ideas in the from the textbook. Now, we know as beginners that we're not beginners, but in showing beginners, and this is a step for beginners at step three, that we have now the fruition of what those pioneers did using these impersonal rules for scientific interpretation. Basically, those rules, as I say, are based only on saying what Mrs. Eddy says, that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are, and not to rely on our own sense of what she says, not to give our subjective interpretation, but just point blank. If she says mind is law, we write it down. We don't put any of our subjective interpretation into it. So therefore, with this work done, we know the books by Max Kapler, those little booklets at this stage. Thank goodness we have them. They're invaluable, really. His booklets 1 to 10. We know the first three booklets deal with, the booklet 1 is an introductory booklet, and then the other booklets, on the one on the days of creation, and the other on the teachings of, for example, the Beatitudes, the Commandments of Beatitudes, Lord's Prayer. But the synonym study starts with the compendium for the study of Christian Science, number 4. And we have, which we just love the fact that mind is housed within one booklet, don't we? It's so nice. And that the study of spirit and what constitutes its ideas are in one booklet. And that soul is in another booklet, principle in another booklet, life in another booklet, truth in another booklet, and love in another booklet. And so we have then these booklets for the study of the synonyms, and we see, and we'll delve in here together just a little bit more, how within each cover of the booklet we have basically mind as the primary heading, and then the various ideas. The first one we have here is creator. That Mrs. Eddy said, mind is the grand creator. So Dorley, and for example, a student, Max Kapler, and others would write down then on their list that creator is an idea of mind, and all the various other ideas. These are invaluable. We have a student of the Dorley Kapler work who has gone in now to the compendiums and has written out, where Max only indicated here and there some references we could read from the textbook on creator. For example, he would say here that mind is the grand creator. Then he would say, look at Science and Health on page 143-26, and you'll find out more about that. Or you could look at Science and Health on page 256, 32-1, or in Science and Health 331, 5-6, and you'd get more information about how mind is the grand creator. Well, the student went in to those pages and wrote out the references. So now, without having to look up the references ourselves, we can just have, we have the compendium work, as Mac gave us, plus the references already written out, which makes it a very quick, fast way of studying the synonyms. These reference work to all the ideas that characterize mind in the Mind Compendium. As Max says, every year, for many years, he would just take mind and read quickly through the textbook every year, just to build up again his tonality of mind through where mind appears. And he would take spirit and read quickly through where spirit appears, or soul, or principle, life, truth, and love, year after year after year, just continuing to keep up his tonality. So these books now on the compendiums, where their references out, says that after we've learned the first impulse of what the ideas are that characterize mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we then, as we go on in our study, can every year take these works on the compendiums and go back and quickly go through them and build up our tonality. It's annoying when students says, well, I've already done the compendiums. One never does the compendium. These are timeless states. Or it's annoying when students say that the compendiums are dry bones. I never have experienced that. When the compendium of mind says that the divine mind is a grand creator, man is not a creator, and the divine mind is producer, and man and the universe are the product, and the divine mind is the only parent of us all, and therefore we're free from the laws of heredity, I don't find anything dry bones about that. You see, it comes alive with an attitude of consciousness. If one's just going to go in and read word and definitions of word, then that's the intellectual approach. We have to touch every subject with the spirit and not just with the letter. That's why I say that we have to not only say, what is reality, but how do I become one with reality? How do I become one with it in tonality? And once it's in tonality, it becomes consciousness. And once it becomes consciousness, it's our very own being, because we're after the quality of consciousness, not after the letters, not our goal. We go through letter and past letter into consciousness. And so the letter is just the means to the spirit. So therefore, this is a means. Step three is just a very foundation and one of the most important steps. I would say probably the most important step on the eight ordered steps to oneness with being, because it lays a foundation for steps 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And if anyone skips step three, then they'll never get our subject. It'll always just be having to go to classes and listen passively to a teacher give their vision of what the Bible means to them, what the model of being means, the textbook means to them, what the model of being means to them. Well, it's inspirational, but it's a crutch. And because this is a principle, we can't always go to teachers to be inspired, as we know. And we know that would go against Max's whole life and his whole career. Because every year when Max came, he came to say, I came not as a guru to inspire you, but I came to teach you a method. And that method is how to become scientist, how to gain the exact letter, and imbibe the spirit. Really, I came not to give you fish, but how to show you how to fish. So we won't know how to fish if we don't know the synonym study. We know that, and it's invaluable. And one never can go over the tonality, as I say, of these synonymous terms enough. So this whole study of step three then goes on with the exercise, and I'll go on with it in depth. But we'll just see what the exercise is. It's a very simple exercise, but but the implication of this exercise is profound. So therefore, we can see that this exercise deals with the ideation lie is conscious. We know we're on the ascending way from the personal I into the I am. So we learn the ideas of mind. When we learn the ideas of mind, and as I say, we're going to go over them, then we can say, well, then I am all of the ideas of mind. For example, I am the idea intelligence. Therefore, I am not the illusion ignorance. And then when we learn all the ideas under spirit, we begin to identify with that idea. We can say, for example, I'm the idea substance. Therefore, I'm not the illusion of being of a matter substance. I'm an idea, identity, substance. My substance is idea.